All right, everybody, welcome to B.O. Boys for Monday, March 18th. Fuck it, it's a raw feed. We're doing it live. I'm Clayton.
Yeah, I'm Pat. Clayton, we have a lot of new releases that came out this weekend, and I won't say any of them lit the box office on fire, but we are going to light the podcast world on fire talking about those movies that didn't light the podcast, box office on fire. Wild results this weekend that we'll go into. Before you plow, just want to quickly let our listeners know that we have a new show.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you haven't watched already, last week we debuted the first episode of the B.O. Boys Kirk-sclusive series on the Kirk Minahan YouTube channel. And episode one was just well-received. I mean, rave reviews by the Minifans on there, breaking YouTube records in terms of viewership, hours watched, all that kind of stuff. And so if you haven't watched the first B.O. Boys Kirk-sclusive on the Kirk Minahan YouTube channel, episode two of the Kirk-sclusive, we recorded already. It should be dropping any minute now, if not up there already, sometime later tonight. And it is a doozy. We interviewed the taker of what is now this famous photo of a drunk guy who jacked himself off to sleep at a movie theater. Now, that's about as much as we could say about the story on the normal B.O. Boys, on this show, on the B.O. Boys podcast feed. But over on the Kirk Minahan channel, that interview is there in its entirety. It's no holds barred. Caution tape has been ripped off of our mouths. We say it all. We're talking about Mushroom Tops, all kinds of stuff.
I mean, Pat, you gotta watch it. This is the B.O. Boys, not Kirk-sclusive.
Not the Kirk-sclusive. You're right. So go over to the Kirk Minahan YouTube channel. Watch episode two of the B.O. Boys Kirk-sclusive. We talk what is probably the movie story of the year thus far. We talked to the photographer, the man who was on site for this incident. And it's 30 minutes of the most riveting radio you've ever heard on YouTube. So that's that. Go there, watch that show. But hey, this is the show. This is the flagship. Mm-hmm. And I think let's get into it with our flagship segment on the flagship show. Clayton, could you give us a plow for the box office weekend of March 15th, 2024?
Number one, Kung Fu Panda 4 made $30 million, down 48%. It added 32 theaters. It's at $107.7 million in its second weekend. Number two, Dune Part 2 made $29.1 million, down only 37%. It lost 227 theaters. It's at $205.3 million in its third weekend of release. Number three, a newbie, Arthur the King, made $7.5 million in its first frame. Number four, Imaginary, made $5.6 million, down 44%. It is at $19 million in its second frame. And number five, Cabrini, made $2.8 million, down 61%. It added 10 theaters. It's at $13 million in its second weekend. And we're going to keep rolling because Love Lies Bleeding had its wide release. It made $2.4 million. That's a plus 1,549%. It added 1,300 theaters. Mm-hmm. It is at $2.7 million in its second weekend of release. And wow, down below, Bob Marley, One Love, which made 2.3, down 44%. Mm-hmm. Lost 492 theaters at 93.3 in its fifth weekend. Right under that is One Life from Bleecker Street. Wow. $1.7 million in only 983 theaters. Now, I'm saying that because underneath that, number nine, the American Society of Magical Negroes made $1.2 million. In its first weekend of release in 1,147 theaters.
More theaters than One Life, yeah.
And then to round it out, Ordinary Angels at 10, $1 million, down 50%. It lost 570 theaters, is at $18 million in its fourth weekend. So
wow.
That's your top 10, Pat. I mean, read it and weep. Read it and weep.
Yeah. You know what? I say let's start off by just getting it out of the way with the big holdovers at the top, because I think this will be quick, because these two movies did great. Kung Fu Panda 4 and Dune Part 2. Fantastic holds. Kung Fu Panda 4 in its second weekend dropped only 48%, $30 million, and great hold for a movie opening big at number one.
Mm-hmm.
And Clayton, I just want to go over the stats quickly of Kung Fu Panda 1 in 2008, opened to $60 million, dropped 44% to $33 million in its second weekend. So part four of this series, opening 16 years later, is having pretty much the same run through the first 2 weeks as the original movie did 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. That, again, we've talked about it to death. It's Jack Black at the peak of his powers right now in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to try to whitewash history here. This was what I was saying for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yep,
that Jack Black is bigger than mm-hmm. he's ever been, especially with kids.
Totally agreed. Always have. Yep.
That is not true. And then the fact that this is the right timing for this movie, right? So like generationally, mm-hmm. it lines up. Three was sort of a stinker. Sort of people were not as big on Jack Black at the moment. The people who had watched these as kids were doing other things. Mm-hmm. I think this solidifies this franchise as a marquee franchise. And mm-hmm. like a fourth movie in a animated series doesn't do this.
No,
it just doesn't.
No. It just
and
doesn't.
So that is amazing. And, you know, it also shows that there should be more rats. I mean, more cheese for the rats.
Yes.
We have enough rats. We don't have enough rats. We just need cheese for the existing rats. I'm not saying mm-hmm. go out and make more rats. Please do not. We have enough rats. We have more than enough rats. But this is a Brie franchise for the rats mm-hmm. and they will show up for Brie and they will show up in numbers. But also, if you're stuck with migration for as long as you are, there's going to be some pent up need for the rats to get their cheese.
Right. I mean, this right now, Kung Fu Panda 4, it's tracking slightly below the original one. It's like, you know, nipping at its heels. And the original one made $215 million domestic. Right now, Kung Fu Panda 4, it could hit $200 million the way it's going right now. Mm-hmm. It definitely can. It definitely can.
It's for very young kids. And what you got coming up is Ghostbusters Frozen Kingdom, which I think is for a little bit older of an audience.
Yeah, like 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds. Yeah, older children. Yeah,
absolutely. Childish people is basically what it's for. But yes. I do think that Kung Fu Panda 4 is still going to stay strong because it's for very, very little kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, this is huge. It's such a feather in Jack Black's cap. And at number two, Dune Part 2, the holds here are fantastic. It's a $205 million. Timothy Chalamet just cemented as a full-on butts-in-the-seats movie star.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, Dune is an IP for sure. Millions of people have read it for sure. There's no guarantee that Dune in and of itself would be a hit. I mean, we saw that in the 80s with the David Lynch version. It's not a slam doink. You make a Dune movie, you have a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And Chalamet, I think, gets a lot of credit for just how well this second one is doing. And coming off of Wonka, you know, solidified. This guy is a butts in the seats movie star. Please don't make Streamo. Don't make a series. No 8-episode.
No Apple
mini
TV
series
plus.
About something that happened in the 90s where you play a celebrity who wronged someone. Like, don't do it. Don't play the inventor of some fad product from the 80s or 90s. Don't do it, Chalamet. Make movies.
If they come to you with a buttload of money and they say, remember slap bracelets? Immediately hang up the phone or pop off the Zoom.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. Don't do it, Chalamet. Make big movies because he's on his way to being the new Leo after Dune 2. Obviously, Leo's got hit after hit after hit, but Chalamet is building himself to be the guy who has a chance at that throne.
And right. I think we need to reiterate, and we do it mm-hmm. every episode, but I think yeah. that's why it's called reiterating, because we do it several times yeah. over Three, several episodes. Yeah. yeah. But this gentleman took Wonka over 200 million domestic. That was not a slam dunk, because
no.
it was a sort of IP that people didn't know if it was still strong.
Right.
Everybody was saying he was miscast.
Right.
It was a musical.
Right.
When musicals were failing, depending right. on the quality of the musical numbers, which is very right. important in a musical.
Right. Even your beloved Dear Evan Hansen didn't hit at the box office.
And those songs are unimpeachable.
Yeah.
Except for the ones that were added for the movie, which kind of stunk. But yeah. the fact that all that happened is, I don't think, getting as much talk and respect as it should. Yeah. Like, Dune Part 2 getting to these numbers, you have a big time, or at least right under the big time name directors, right? So right. he's making his way into a name director world. He right. just has to have something original really pop after this.
Yeah, he needs his Inception, yeah.
Yeah.
Although Arrival, some would say, was that, but sure, he needs another one, yeah.
But I think for the generation now, I mean, I think Arrival yeah. was a long time ago and a different movie, a very adult movie that I don't think would resonate as much now or do as well now if he wasn't a known quantity.
Okay.
So I think you've got that going for it. And but I do think, just like in general, the power that this gentleman has now is mm-hmm. we haven't seen this in a while, and we really need to cultivate it and really respect it, because
yeah.
stars could be back, and that is great for theatrical. That is great for theatrical.
Well, let's get into a star who this weekend seems like he's very much on the wane. Clayton, can we move on to talk about the number 3 movie at the box office this weekend? Arthur the King, Mark Wahlberg, plus a dog. You said it's 7.5 million at the box office. Now, we both predicted this was not going to be a big hit, but we both predicted double digits. I mean, I think I may have said around 12, 13.
I think I said 9.9.
You did. You're right. You did say 9.9, which is almost 10. Like, I mean, we predicted higher than 7.5 for sure. Like, if you look down the list, you know, Arthur the King, we haven't seen it, but it's not a religious movie, but it's definitely, like we talked about in the weekend preview, Wahlberg is a religious person, and so there's always going to be an element of it being a religious movie by mm-hmm. Wahlberg being in a movie. But, yeah. you know, there's inspirational tone to this trailer, but, you know, you look down the list, and something like Ordinary Angels is now at $18 million after 4 weeks. Hilary Swank star in a straight up religious movie, Arthur the King opening at 7.5. I don't think that this Mark Wahlberg movie ends up grossing as much as Ordinary Angels when all is said and done.
No, it's going to get so lost in the shuffle in the next few weeks. This was its shot, if it even had a shot. And yeah, I think that
that's damning.
7.5 is really bad. I mean, it is Lionsgate. Yeah. So again, promotion is nil.
Right.
I think he really degraded himself and his stardom through streaming 100%. This movie will do Bafo Streamo, but at the end of the day, that's not good for his theatrical career going forward. When I think theatrical is becoming as important as it used to be, this is pretty bad. I mean, if he couldn't do it with a dog, and Channing Tatum could do it with a dog.
Right.
What does that say about Wahlberg and his star power? I mean, that, you know,
he's no Channing Tatum right now. I mean, that's the first top line thing it says is Channing Tatum is a bigger box office star today than Mark Wahlberg is, mm-hmm. Full stop, as people say, full stop. Channing Tatum is a bigger star at the box office.
Now, a caveat with these numbers. So when we talk about domestic, we talk North American. And mm-hmm. This did not get released in Canada for whatever reason. I don't know what the situation is, but so there's a whole section of North America that was not able to spend money to see this movie. Mm-hmm. So who knows what that would be? Would that be half a million? Would that be a million? We don't know. Even right, if this right. thing, say, best case scenario, 1.5, this thing doesn't get to double digits. So right. it's still a failure, even if Canada gives you $1.5 million. So that's the problem. And this is a wide, wide release. I mean, we're talking 3,000 theaters. We're not talking, you know, as much as One Life and the American Society of Magical People had smaller, you know, openings. This is a right. wide, wide opening.
Yes, this was a full, I mean, and like we said, Lionsgate is just a mess right now. They're begging to be sold, whatever's going on there. So they didn't promote it very well, but it's a Mark Wahlberg movie in 3,000 theaters and it did $7.5 million. So it is a disaster. I think why it didn't get released in Canada, I don't know. I mean, we know Mark Wahlberg is very patriotic. He was a star of Patriots Day, and maybe he doesn't want his film to release in Canada. You know, there's some perceived slight that he saw in the, you know, international relationship between Canada and the U.S. I don't think Canada is particularly super fond of Mark Wahlberg anyway, so I don't think they would have added much to this box office. You touched on something earlier, how much streamo Mark Wahlberg has been making the last 5 years. I mean, I'm looking at his filmography, and since 2020, you know, these movies have been made by Mark Wahlberg and released direct to streaming. Spencer Confidential, Infinite, Me Time, The Family Plan. Those movies, and maybe they did big numbers on streamo, and I'm sure he got big paychecks, but those movies, I think, have fully degraded him as a movie star. People see him as a streamo boy. They see him as someone who you get for free on television. No longer is someone who you have to pay to see. You know, like a Timothy Chalamet. You have to pay to see Timothy Chalamet.
Yes.
But you don't have to pay to see Mark Wahlberg any longer.
And I think the thing is that if you even saw a commercial for Arthur the King, you would not clock that it's a theatrical movie. You would assume that it's on a streamer because you would just blank out whatever the thing is at the very end, where it's either the Amazon or the Netflix or the Apple TV Plus. So, you know, we always say it's better to go theatrical because that's where, you know, you get some money, you put some money in the theater's pockets, which keeps that running. And then you become more of a respectable movie because you actually were a theatrical movie. The problem with Mark Wahlberg's career is that all of this is negated by what I just stated, is that people are going to assume this is a streamer. So when they see a commercial for it, even if they see a commercial, if they see a trailer at the theater, they're going to be like, wow, it's weird that they're doing trailers for Amazon movies now.
Right.
Because people will just assume they have the Pavlovian response to a Mark Wahlberg movie, that it is going to be on their television.
Right. That is for sure hurt him as a box office draw. And, you know, you see it with someone like Adam Sandler, that he went full streamo to Netflix, but he's managed to make the rare theatrical only releases he's made big events, like an Uncut Gems, you know, and just feel like, let you know that's in theaters. And otherwise, he's just been, I just make movies for streaming. He got in first, which I think is big for his credibility, because it doesn't feel like he was forced there. It feels like he made the active choice. Where someone like Mark Wahlberg, it does feel like he was forced into going streaming. And that stuff like Me Time and The Family Plan were movies that he had no choice but to put on Amazon and on Netflix. You know, it feels like a last resort in a way it never did for Sandler.
Yeah. And to, you know, absolutely to stick up for The Sandman, comedy died at the theaters. Comedy is still dead at the theaters. And so that is the only place he can do what he wants to do, truly.
Where
I think the thing with these sort of movies, this sort of inspirational movie, or the sort of movies that he's having go to streamers, I think Mendelsohn said it, that the studios have to allow some of these movies to fail in order to train people to go back to the theater for the movies that they actually want to see.
Yes,
for the ones that work. Yeah, for the ones that work, right? So for every rom-com that fails at the theater, you have Anyone But You, right? So there's got to be failures at the theater for people, even in small numbers, to say, oh, you know what? I did enjoy that, though. I did enjoy that experience. So if there's something that's really great, I want to see it. That needs to happen. And everybody's so fearful on every level that it's going to make it very difficult for that to be the case. But I think, yeah, that's really the thing, is that Wahlberg maybe just doesn't have the traction now at the theater to tell a studio, make this theatrical. Make this theatrical and I'll make it a hit, because he can't.
He can't. He can't. The people don't want to pay just to see him. And he was in Uncharted, you know, back in, what was that, February of 2022. And that was a hit. But it has Spidey-Man. And he was the value add there. And I think, I think that's the key here with Mark Wahlberg is, and listen, we're happy if he wants to come on this show. We're happy to have that talk with him. The talk that I think his management, his agents aren't mad enough, and I get it, because Mark Wahlberg is jacked up, and he's from Massachusetts, and he's always ready to clonk heads together, especially if they're Hollywood suits. And I get it being scared of him.
And the power of Christ compels him. The power of Christ compels him.
The power of Christ. He gets up at 4 a.m. to work out and to pray. So I understand if his management is too scared to look him in the eyes and tell him, Mark Wahlberg, Marky Mark, we'd say that, because we'd want to let him know that we see him. Marky Mark, you are a value add. You are no longer a theatrical movie star. You're for sure, I think, a very valuable value add. And if we're guiding your career, we're going to make a lot of use of your value addness in theaters. But he is no longer a top of the title, above the title, put butts in the seats theatrical draw anymore.
And the thing about that is that he may look at it as terrible that happened. And it's not great, obviously, because you want to be the number one on the call sheet. But there are stars who went from that to not being a value add at all.
Right.
And that's not the case. Being a value add is going to lengthen his career for decades, possibly.
Right, right.
If he can look at it in a positive way. But again, the things that get you to the top really hurt you on the way back down.
Right, right. Because all of that, you know, bravado and just self-confidence and, you know, I'm number one, I'm the best in the world, all that stuff got Mark Wahlberg to the top. It got him to be the lone survivor. It got him on that run in the 2000s where he's just making hits out of everything. But it doesn't help him now when he's got to accept he is now a value add. And it's going to make him just go fall back into being the above the title guy on Streamo movies.
Yeah.
Because when you see that you can no longer make hits at the box office, you could either become a value add or you could become the star of Streamo movies. And I would guess the latter is where Wahlberg is going to feel safe going.
And the biggest payday. And if he's
payday, of course.
And, you know, he's got a family.
Yes, yes, yes. And yeah, so it's a tough spot. I think this confirms that he's no longer a draw at the theaters. Arthur the King is going to just drop off the face of the earth going forward. There's nothing left for this movie. I mean, Weekend 2, it's going to do nothing.
Let's look at demos here. Even split between men and women, 36% between 18 and 34, 40% over 45. Largest demo was 25 to 34 at 23% and over 55 at 22%. 52% of the audience was Caucasian. That is not a surprise. 25% Latino Hispanic, 8% Black, and 10% Asian.
Yeah.
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 So let's talk a little bit about me being right here.
Okay.
Because
And me being right as well.
I don't think so, because
I'll show you why I was right, but you could get into why you think you were right. You could start here.
I love that, the way you said that.
Yeah.
You're going to show me why you are right.
Yeah.
And but I need to tell you why I think I'm right.
Yes.
Okay. So Imaginary, you said you didn't think this movie was going to have any sort of hold.
Oh, we're talking about Imaginary. Okay.
Talking about Imaginary here. Yes.
Okay.
And 44%. Now, listen, this does not keep Chauncey in Hollywood. Chauncey is on a train out right now, out of the gates of Hollywood, to not come back. We're not going to see Imaginary 2, The Return of Chauncey. You know, this isn't Brahms. This isn't the boy Brahms, okay?
No.
Who got another, you know, another chance to...
Yeah, this is not your boy Brahms, no.
My boy Brahms. This is Chauncey, and Chauncey did better than we expected. Not better than I expected. Better than you expected is what I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing held. Now, it's not a hit. It's going to make probably 20, 22. But this just shows horror. There's always a place for it, especially when the kids want to go somewhere and do whatever they want to do in the dark.
Do whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. So Imaginary was there for them. And so I think I got this top five correct.
Okay.
Even though you were very low on Imaginary.
Yeah. I mean, I think I had it flipped with Cabrini. I thought Cabrini would hold better than it did. I mean, Cabrini had a bad drop. It had a bad drop.
And, you know, Wannabeo Boy Austin, star of Cabrini.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I feel like this isn't on him at all.
Oh, God, no. I mean, whatever businesses did, I think he was a big draw for it. I mean, he promoted the hell out of it on the BO Boys a couple of weeks ago, so he did his part.
Yeah, so 13 million. I do think they had higher hopes for this. You know, I've seen posters everywhere. You know, it did look like a legitimate movie, but I just think this is a sort of a hard sell, it turned out to be. And I'm not going to blame, like, who, you know, I'm not going to put any blame on any certain group for why this movie didn't do well, but
I'll say it right now because I'm allowed to say it.
Okay.
This is not a good box office result for Italian Americans. And I am allowed to say that. I'm a paisan, and Cabrini, listen, we've had hits. My God, we've had hits. Godfathers. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that. But Cabrini is not a great result. And Green Book. I mean, as recently as Green Book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a man folded a pizza on the big screen, won Best Picture, box office hit. So, I mean, listen, the Italian Americans, we've got a record at the box office. Cabrini, though, is a failure for our people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm allowed to say that, and I did say that. So that, you know, but we move on.
I nodded in solidarity. Not well. I mean, the director is still trying to get his passion project, the pizzeria movie, going. So that'll be big for you guys.
Well, oh, you mean the writer Nick Vallelongo
of
Green Book? Yeah,
who has more has more Oscars than Martin Scorsese?
He does, yes, because I think writer and producer, so he's ahead of Scorsese as far as, you know, all-time Italian-American filmmakers. It's Nick Vallelongo one, and then Martin Scorsese down there. But yeah, I mean, maybe if Nick Vallelongo had, if he had, you know, the Cabrini was directed by the guy who directed Sound of Freedom, and, you know, obviously he had a big hit last year, but if Nick Vallelongo had directed Cabrini, and Cabrini had folded up an entire pizza and eaten it in two bites, you know, on the you know, the foot of the Vatican, which I think Nick Vallelongo, that's the opener of his Cabrini.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bigger box office hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for sure. So this Cabrini, you know, listen, Italian Americans, we move on, we soldier on, and we'll have it hit the box office soon enough, I'm sure.
Now, what were you right about?
Here's what I was right about.
I can't wait for this shit.
At number eight at the box office is Anthony Hopkins in One Life. And on our weekend preview, you scoffed. In fact, you didn't even scoff. You slept as I talked about this film, made the case that we needed to cover this film in the preview episode. You just did not think it was necessary at all. You did your sleeping bit. you know, audiences don't say are divided it's a, on that bit.
It's not
audiences a are divided
bit.
On
I
that.
I hate when people say the bit.
Okay,
bit.
What is but you this? Slept.
This is comedy bang bang. I'm not doing a bit.
This is. This
I
is,
get tired. I work in a soot mine.
You do work in a soot mine, and this is not comedy bang bang. It is not. So you were sleeping as I talked about One Life, described what it's about, Anthony Hopkins on a talk show, you know, given the story of his life, which involved him in pre-World War II times, saving people before they were invaded by the Nazis. And then he's on a talk show years later as an old man. And the kids who he saved are now grown up into adults, and they're presenting themselves.
Wait,
when I said that.
I did, but wait. I had an idea for how this could have really done Buffa Bobo.
Okay, how could it have done Buffa Bobo?
He's on Hot Ones.
Yes. Yes. I think
the talk
timeline
show is Hot Ones.
I think the timeline didn't match up. Because for him to have been on Hot Ones, he would have been probably 110 or so.
Even better.
Like
it could have killed him.
Yeah. No, for sure. If they had gotten Sean from Hot Ones to star alongside Anthony Hopkins in One Life, I think it would have done better. But all to say, I wanted us to preview this film. You slept through it. And we look at the results. And this finished ahead of a much more highly promoted new release, and a new release that had more movies, screens showing it. One Life from Bleecker Street finished ahead of Focus Features American Society. And I think that result backs up my point that we needed to preview Anthony Hopkins' One Life film.
Okay. Well, that may be so, but I've got a rebuttal for you, Dingus, because
okay,
here
we're
go
going.
With you
we're being, going there with Dingus. We're doing Dingus now on this show.
Here we go.
This is not the Kirk exclusive. This is still the BO boys. You know,
oh yeah,
caution tape. It's off, but it's mm-hmm. on a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But say Dingus, go for it.
You
see if the FCC steps in.
You lambasted me for mm-hmm. saying that. Oh, this is something that could be akin to the Book of Clarence, which opened at 2.4, 2.5. Yeah. You said that just the fact that the American Society takes place in present time
mm-hmm.
and has David Alan Grier in it, which we both love, Dag. We love Dag, but he is not a draw.
No, no. My thing was more that cell phones would be in it, not okay. David Alan Grier.
Cell phones
I put more
would
stock
be in
into cell phones, yeah.
And you sat there and you said, there's no way that is a good comp or it's going to be as low as that. This thing opened to 1.2. That is terrible. Pat, you were wrong about this movie. This no one wanted, less people wanted this movie than the Book of Clarence, a movie that nobody wanted.
Yeah.
So you were wrong about the American Society. You were wrong about it.
Here's what I'll say. I was wrong about how much people need to see cell phones in a film. And this is a bad look for cell phones because I definitely thought that the presence of cellular phones and modern technology would be a bigger draw than seeing, you know, biblical times.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wrong about that. And that's very bad for if you're a cell phone company, if you're an Apple, you should be, you're making money hand over fist. I get that. But this should be a little shock to your system that Book of Clarence did bigger business than Magical Society, which is set in the present and has characters holding cell phones.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that is damning for this movie. Pat, what happened here? What happened? I mean, absolutely no one wanted to see this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think a big thing that happened here, and listen, we're not critics, huh?
Huh.
And we critics are not everything. They're a small part of it. But this movie just got lambasted by critics. The word of mouth on this is so bad. This did 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, and God, Rotten Tomatoes, completely flawed system, million critics on there that don't matter, all that. We're not critics, huh?
Huh.
But I think it really comes down to this movie needed to be somewhat decent to get business because there's no big stars in it. There's no IP. There's no draw to this movie other than it'll be funny and you'll have a good time. But if every review is saying this is bad and you won't have a good time, then there's really nothing that makes people have any desire to go to this movie. And I think that is what happened here is this movie was, it didn't have to be great to do bigger than Book of Clarence, but it needed to be at least okay. Mm-hmm. And any indicator that people are getting is that this movie would be terrible. And a movie can't have no stars, no IP, no giant promotional elements, not be a genre film. You know, a horror movie could be terrible and still do business, but
imaginary.
Yeah. You can't have none of those elements and also be terrible.
Yeah. Post track 70% and 51% definite recommend. So what that means is that these are the people that went out for weekend one of the American Society. And they hated it. So that's the thing. You got to remember that is these are the people who booked it on their calendar and said, this is when I'm seeing this movie immediately. Yeah. And they didn't like it. That is damning. And we're just seeing these small movies. We thought Lisa Frankenstein was a low bar. And then Driveaway Dolls happened.
Driveaway Dolls. Yeah.
And then, you know, now the American Society happened. So, like, small movies are having trouble.
Yes. Yeah.
And
they're going lower and lower and lower. And you look at Focus Features, and obviously they had a stinker on their hands here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, after the Holdovers debacle, were one of the best movies of the year with such a easy premise, feel good story, you know, everyone loved it when they saw it. And the fact that Focus Features bungled the release of that film and couldn't get that to $30 or $40 million domestic. Focus Features is in a bad way right now in terms of, if not picking the movies, promoting and releasing their movies. And obviously that's a problem right now post COVID for art house, you know, divisions in general. But you saw something like Poor Things from Fox do well in terms of art house box office, and Focus Features is just, they are in a bad way right now with marketing and promoting their movies. Because this is such a bad number. Even if Magical Society is a bad movie, you're getting to 1.2 million. I mean, you're getting to Playmobil the movie territory. Mm-hmm. You can't do that.
It was almost Armageddon time.
Wow.
Armageddon,
which I think that might have been Focus Features.
I know. Well, so Poor Things is 20th Century, right? Because there's no longer Fox.
Yes, yeah, 20th Century. Yeah.
So, Pat.
Searchlight, you know. So, but basically what used to be Fox within Disney. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the last movie we have to talk about is going to be a great segue into, you know, Arc exclusive, which should be available right now for you to watch.
Yeah.
Right after this, hopefully.
Yeah. And just one before you get into that, Armageddon time was Focus Features. Okay. So Focus Features is just in such a bad way with releasing these movies.
Yeah. Love Lies Bleeding, which went, widened.
Yeah.
In release, did okay. It did better than something like Zola, which, I mean, the fact that it's even being compared to Zola is not great.
Yep.
You know, this is a movie that I said could do $40 million. I don't stand by that. I did retract that. So just as long as everybody knows after I saw
You said that over a month ago when we had Jeff Bach on for the spring preview. So, you know, you said that way in advance of the movie coming out.
Yeah. So this movie seems to have done really well with women under 25. So, 60% of women came to this movie. It was 60% women, 40% men. The women gave it an 83%, men gave it a 72%. Biggest ticket buyers, 18 to 34. And best grades came from under 25 women. Mm-hmm. So that was 28% of the audience. So mm-hmm. this is a movie that skews young,
mm-hmm.
which is good. I mean, that's who goes to the theater is the youngins. Right. And the fact that this expanded and there could be some word of mouth happening here. Also,
it's going to have to be. Yeah.
And also, like we will get into in our Kirk exclusive, viral tweets are also very important when it comes to these sort of movies. And we have one. So
mm-hmm.
I am bullish now about the future of this film.
Mm-hmm.
As much mm-hmm. as I didn't enjoy it like I thought I would, it was my most anticipated. And I don't think it really hit the heights I wanted it to. I'm not a critic, huh? But I am a theater goer and a movie goer. So mm-hmm. that is important. I think we have to play a wait and see for next weekend with this movie. Mm-hmm. Because after what has happened and what we'll talk about, this could get a big bump.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to have strong word of mouth and long legs. And I agree there's a possibility of that. And in the sense of, could this movie get into $10 to $20 million territory?
$20 would be tough, I think.
It would be tough, but the viral tweet could help. And you know, we talked about it at the top of the show, but you got to watch the BO Boys Kirk exclusive on the Kirk Minahan YouTube channel, because we talked to the great photographer Ben Salami on that episode, who took the viral photo of the drunk guy jacking himself off to sleep at the Love Lies Bleeding screening. And that's the type of thing, especially with young people, that could keep the word of mouth going, people, you know. And it's akin to the Vomit, A Terrifier 2, which really goosed those numbers, really kept the legs for that movie going. And this drunk guy jacking himself off to sleep at Love Lies Bleeding could be the type of thing that keeps that word of mouth going. So I don't think this movie's dead. I definitely don't think this movie's dead. You saw this film, you didn't like it, but I've seen more and more, like, people do like this movie. Mm-hmm. People have seen it, like it. At first, my position was, you said you didn't like it, not worth seeing, so I wasn't going to see it. But maybe it's the drunk guy jacking himself off to sleep in that Ben Salami photo and tweet. And maybe it's all the other reviews I'm seeing of people saying they liked it. But I kind of am now inclined to go see this film myself in the theater. And I do think there's enough word of mouth out, and it's such a unique experience. That I could see it being leggy. But again, the ceiling for this is still pretty low. Can it get into the teens? You know, can it get to $15 million?
But for an old school A24, because obviously A24 is trying to pivot, and they've got Civil War coming up. They're trying to pivot into bigger budget, mm-hmm. you know, higher grossing films. This was still released under the understanding that this is an A24, old school A24 movie.
Yeah.
So it making 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Yeah.
Is great for this film.
Yeah. Yeah. And they want to be in business with Kristen Stewart. You know, she's the perfect kind of A24 star to have in the stable and to do other projects.
She brings in the young women. She was able to, in a world where there's barely any magazines on the stands, there's mm-hmm. no magazines. You go to the magazine section, you don't see magazines. You see special issues of People with the Friends cast on them. You don't see weekly or monthly magazines. She was able to have a controversial Rolling Stone cover.
Yeah.
In the year of 2024.
Yep.
And that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that can't be understated, that people were talking about a magazine cover because of Kristen Stewart. Yeah. This is one I'm curious to keep tracking and see if it holds really well. See if it's like one of those movies that we look next week and it's had a, you know, 30% drop in its second weekend of wide release. So, you know, that's possible. Again, especially with the Ben Salami tweet and that incredible photo, it's very possible that the word of mouth for Love Lies Bleeding carries this thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll see. I would say that's about it for this weekend at the box office. Is there anything else, Clayton, that you want to cover?
No.
On this episode, just checking real quick if there is one thing I just want to quickly get to, just pose this to you. Well, actually, you know what? We'll save the emails for the weekend preview episode. How about we do that?
Yeah.
Let's do that. Yeah. That's where we'll do that. So, okay. So everyone, of course, email us theboboyspodcast@gmail.com. We're going to be recording the weekend preview episode a little earlier in this week. So if you hear this and want us to answer an email on the weekend preview episode, send it immediately. theboboyspodcast@gmail.com. Send us your thoughts, boots on the ground reporting, all that kind of stuff. If you want us to read an email on the weekend preview episode, get that email to us pretty much the second you hear what I'm saying right now. Of course, watch us on our YouTube channel. We are YouTubers. All of our full episodes go on the BO Boys YouTube channel and clips and all that. So subscribe if you haven't to the BO Boys YouTube channel. But of course, also got to go over to KMS, the Kirk Minahan Show YouTube channel. BO Boys Kirk exclusive episodes are there. Episode 2 with the great Ben Salami is on that channel. If not now, within minutes, it'll be up there. It is a just incredible interview about an incredible photo, biggest movie story of the year. So go watch the Kirk exclusive new series from the BO Boys. Follow us on social media at the BO Boys Pod. Wanna BO senior intern Christopher is just killing it there with the clips, with the tweets, with the TikTok. So Twitter X, TikTok at the BO Boys Pod. Wanna BO junior intern Jack writing up a storm on the Substack. I mean, we have got, the articles are great, Clayton, and people are interacting over there. We're getting comments and we're getting conversations happening under Jack's articles. So we have got just BO Boys everywhere right now. YouTube, multiple YouTube channels, multiple platforms. Social media. Substack now is just going crazy. So thank you, Jack, for your work on the Substack. It's back. And give us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. You know, the reviews help more people find the shows and important work we do, like interviewing Ben Salami. And yeah, I mean, anything else, Clayton? I mean, I think we covered it all.
Yeah, just a real quick shout out to one of BO Boy, Ryan, who always makes some comments on our Substacks. We're going to get to some of those at some point, but we see you and we speak your name.
Yes. Thank you, Ryan. We do see you. And yeah, I mean, I think that's it, Clayton. I think we've done it all.
I can't think of anything left to be said. Except for, until next time, we'll smell you at the box office.